Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
This is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Another good-looking day. A little bit warmer. It seems like every day just a little bit warmer, a couple of degrees, but still really nice. Hope everybody enjoying this weather because, I mean, it's great to see this, you know, pretty comfortable weather when there's not, you know, there's no pollen, there's no, you know, nothing to be concerned with. We haven't had much rain lately and doesn't look like we're going to get some for a while, but it is October, which is usually the driest month. But anyway, welcome in on another beautiful day to The Drive, the Tuesday edition. Bill and Dan here in the studio today. Drew with the afternoon off, so we've got it here in the studio, and should be another fun show again here this afternoon. We got that? There we go. There we go. That should take care of things. So welcome in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio as Drew with an afternoon off. And we're going to go ahead and jump right to the Drive hotline and welcome in our good friend, voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. Hey, Andy, how you doing today?
I'm doing just well. Let me start this show today by saying this, and this is going to sound goofy. I understand. Jan and I, my brother and sister-in-law, went to the Montgomery Performing Arts Center on Sunday to see Mark Lowry perform. Outstanding gospel singer, longtime member of the Gaither Vocal Band, love his music.
Right.
I've seen him perform for a long, long time. He has a touring group right now, and there's a group called Endless Highway that is a mother or husband, wife, and then a son and a daughter that perform as well.
Okay.
Their son looks just like Dan Peck.
Wow.
I thought of Dan Peck all night long watching this tenor singing with Endless
tenor.
Highway.
I want to see Dan
don't hit
some of those notes.
Don't blow my cover, my secret.
He wasn't
the secret career.
He wasn't a high tenor, but he was a lead tenor. Mm.
Well, that's good.
I thought, holy cow, I'm watching Dan Peck on stage all night.
Wow, that is crazy. See, I was wondering where you were going with that, Andy. I know Andy has Andy has an excellent singing voice as well, and I was wondering if Andy was going to tell us, you know, what his next career move was going to be or something. So
no, that was not it at all.
Great.
We had a great time. They're terrific.
That's
very, very good. But I'm like, I'm watching a younger Dan Peck sing right now.
It's good to know that my doppelganger got some talent. At least, you know, it's, you know, someone in the experiment came away with
wow,
something
cool.
Usable. But no, that's wonderful. Best of luck to best of luck to the young tenor.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, wow.
All right, moving on.
Well, Andy, that's good. I'm glad you had something really enjoyable there on Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, because Saturday night, man, another tough. It's hard to describe, you know, how excruciating the last three ball games have been. It feels like somebody in the press box was saying, hey, it's deja vu all over again.
Yeah,
I mean, because Auburn plays so hard, and they're there, and they have chances, and then it just seems like, you know, almost whatever can happen does, and things go south.
The first 28 minutes of the first half were as good as Auburn has played all season long.
In a long time.
Offensively, defensively, yes. Against a quality opponent, too, by the way. It wasn't just, you know, a team that Auburn should dominate. We're talking about Georgia. And for 28 minutes, that Auburn team was sensational. And when the fumble, as it was ruled, occurred, the entire game changed. And Georgia took control of the game at that moment. It drove the length of the field, got the field goal. Didn't come out immediately in the second half. I mean, turned the ball over on downs, gave Auburn great field position
right
at its 42-yard line, and then Auburn turned it over on downs. And then Auburn still had a chance in the fourth quarter before Georgia's after the missed field goal by Georgia, still had a chance to drive and to take the lead back, and was just unable to do so. And I have rarely seen a game turn as dramatically, Bill, Dan, as that one did Saturday night, because to that point, until that fumble, as it was ruled, at the goal line, other than scoring on the drive in which Auburn kicked the field goal, I'm not sure Auburn could have dominated that first half any more than it did until that fumble. And that game changed dramatically at that point, and Auburn never could get the momentum back at that point. And I know it's frustrating for all of us that cover Auburn, for us that call for Auburn. I know it's frustrating for the Auburn family. I know it's frustrating for that coaching staff and those players especially right now. I think everybody is very frustrated with that one. And it was an opportunity to seize control of the season with that ball game on Saturday night. And boy, for 28 minutes, it looked like that was going to happen, but for not.
No, you're right about that, Andy. I mean, it was complete domination, and then a total 180 from that point. And you know, Coach Freeze has talked about it, and you know, obviously the fans, everybody is, you know, really concerned with this situation. But I really wonder. I mean, how it's as though some people feel like, well, you just flip a switch or you make one change and things are gonna turn around. But a concern that I have, and I'm sure quite a few people do, is man, when things like this continually happen, it becomes more and more difficult each time out to not have that, not just in the back of your minds, but right there, close to the front of your minds, if something goes wrong.
I think that's natural to think that way, Bill. I do. And yet, I listen to these players talk. I listen to Coach Freeze talk. I talk to some of these coaches. I think Auburn is doing everything it can to turn things around at this point. And, you know, if there was a switch to be flipped, they'd have done it.
Oh, yeah.
And all I can say is Auburn's next opportunity to turn things around or to start the process of turning this season around is Saturday night against a really good Missouri team. When I think Missouri, when I think Eli Drinkwitz, I think offense. But look at the defensive numbers for Missouri that comes to town. They're number three in scoring defense, number one against the rush, number nine against the pass, number four in total yards defensively in the Southeastern Conference. They do things that Auburn, on the other hand, has struggled with in that their time of possession is off the charts, and they take control of games in the second half. And that is where Auburn has struggled primarily this season, is second half. So how does Auburn rectify that against a team that is very, very good in the second half, that is very good at controlling the clock? How does Auburn handle that this week against the Missouri team? It's a good question. I don't have the answer for it yet, but I do think that Auburn has the ability and the talent to do it.
And Eli Drinkwitz's teams have not always been built around a run game, but this one with
Ahmad Hardy, you know, one of the best running backs in the nation,
who Auburn saw last year when he was at ULM before transferring to Missouri. I mean, he's just been the tip of the spear for that Missouri offense, and one of the reasons Saturday night feels like you know, to call it generously a missed, this past Saturday night feels like a missed opportunity for Auburn. It's not just the top-tier atmosphere. I think it's also the fact that you had another performance that felt like winning football by your defense, third time this year in conference, that you can describe the defensive effort as enough or more than enough to win the game most nights. And you wonder, because I know you've seen seasons like this before too, Andy, where eventually it gets harder and harder for the defense to pitch those kind of shutouts. Like eventually,
I agree with you. I don't get that impression with this team yet. Okay, I don't sense a rift in the program or anything like that. But I think it's natural to think that that is a concern if this continues, and
especially
if it continues with the defense playing as well as it has, and the offense struggling, especially in the second half. I mean, it struggled the whole game at A&M, but it struggled mightily in the second half last week against Georgia. I think a missed opportunity is a very good way, a very apt way of putting what happened last Saturday night against Georgia. It was there for Auburn. And for whatever reason, the inability then to recover from one play, and whether you agree with the officials or not, the one play that's when the game turned.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
That's when the game turned, and Auburn just never could get untracked offensively in the second half of play.
And the play in question is not the clap / timeout. Yep. That's not the one you're talking about. Although I've never seen that one, Andy. And you know, thankfully,
did
that,
you lose it? As did you?
Oh,
lose,
you got to see it. There's video of Andy's call. Yeah,
I was afraid I was going to be tossed from our part of the press box, Andy. It was like that's got to either be a timeout or a delay a game. There's no way around it.
Yeah, and I've seen the meme or whatever it is out there. I don't know how you explain that. I don't know how you explain that call.
You can't.
Yeah. So I don't know. No, I don't know how you can. And both sides debate whether it's a fumble or not, whether he's across the line. Right. Listen, I thought he was across the line.
Well, and
you know who I broadcast for. Mm. I just thought there was pretty clear evidence of that.
You know,
across the line.
The other thing is, Andy, there are multiple pictures. I didn't even notice at the time because of where we were. But I mean, I've gone back and looked at that just to try to determine that. And yes, there are a couple of Georgia helmets that are definitely lined up offsides on that play with the officials lined looking right down the line at them. So that play shouldn't have even counted.
Maybe they should have they should have thrown the flag during the replay review, like they did a little bit later on
throw the flag on the officials for not noticing that Georgia's got half its team lined up on Auburn's side of the ball.
Thankfully, the missed timeout deal didn't play a huge role in deciding. Like that didn't come right before Georgia scored. That's the missed field goal drive. Thankfully, that's not one that played like an outsized role in deciding. Yeah. You know what happened in the game, but yeah, it's just good. And you know, and Andy, to my point about the defense, like yeah, I think some of that is a defensive mentality. Some of it is. You might run into some really good offenses, and this season could wear on you some. And I just Saturday night, like you said, Missouri's a different kind of attack than Auburn's seen the last couple of weeks. And Bill, you've made the point before that the game after an LSU or a Georgia is always so tough for Auburn because those games are such physical nights for your team. I want to, this feels like a backbone test for Auburn Saturday night against Missouri.
I mean, you say the same thing about Missouri. I mean, they just played Alabama.
Right. Yep.
That's a much improved Alabama team since the opening day against Florida State.
Absolutely. And they're on the road for the first time all year.
Right. Exactly. They played, you know, Auburn opened the year with 5 at home last year. Missouri has opened the year with 6 at home. So they come in here for a Saturday night game at Jordan-Hare Stadium, which we know how tough that is for opponents, how much of a lift that must be for Auburn. I think it's going to be a great atmosphere. It looks like the weather is going to be terrific. Mm-hmm. And without, you know, sounding, well, it didn't take rocket science. This ball game is really important.
Yes,
for this
indeed.
Season.
Yes, indeed.
For this Auburn team, this Saturday night is a very, very important football game for the Tigers. If there is to be a turnaround for this season, it needs to start Saturday night against Missouri. And that's a good Missouri team, folks. That is a good Missouri team that comes rolling in. I mean, this is a team that has won back-to-back 10 wins, has back-to-back 10-win seasons coming in. So buckle up as we get ready for Missouri on Saturday.
Yeah, they are 27-5, I believe, over the last 2.5 years. So very impressive.
Auburn, of course, will be without Damari Alston, it appears, for the rest of the season. That announcement was made yesterday. I kind of caught wind of that in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And Hugh Freeze talked about it at his press conference yesterday afternoon. Talked about it a little bit more on Tiger Talk last night. And that's a big loss for this team, not only on the field, but it's a loss of one of your captains.
Right.
As well. And I was there today to get player audio for our pregame show on Saturday afternoon, and a lot of the guys were asked about the loss of Damari Alston, and basically across the board, although there are a couple changes, but or a couple differences. I mean, all those guys really liked Damari, and there wasn't anything said poorly about Damari. I think these guys miss him, but they've got to move on to play without Damari. And I wish Damari best of whatever is next for him and his career. And I hate that it's not with this Auburn team for the back half of this season.
Yeah, now, I mean, it's hard to imagine not having the opportunity to see young Omar Mabson.
No question about that. I mean, obviously, it's the Jeremiah Cobb show.
Oh, yes.
For Auburn. And he's Auburn's leading rusher with 453 yards. He's second with 4 touchdown runs this season behind Jackson Arnold. But, I mean, your two choices until Darrell Robinson is back, and Coach Freeze talked about it last night, that Darrell is now running, at least,
mm-hmm.
and they'd love to have him perhaps as early as next week when Auburn goes to Arkansas. We'll wait and see. He will not be out there this week. But until they get Darrell back and healthy, it's Jeremiah Cobb and Omar Mabson and Justin Jones,
yeah,
for that matter. So that's your 3 tailbacks at this point. And I think it makes it even more important the game that Jackson Arnold, because he was announced as the starter by Hugh Freeze yesterday, the kind of game that he has on Saturday. Not only throwing the football, but obviously running the football. And we know how well he can run it. His longest run came on that quarterback draw in the, was it on the drive in which Auburn fumbled at the goal line? On the big third down play. So
yeah, the 27 or so yarder. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think Jackson is even more important that he executes well because of the loss of an Damari Alston to Auburn's tailback room at this point.
And even if Alston wasn't huge on the stat sheet the last couple of weeks, he made multiple really important blocks in pass protection.
Right. The best pass pro that Auburn had as far as a running back.
Saves Jackson's bacon on one in particular.
And you know, you wonder, and Coach Freeze has talked about one of the biggest concerns about Omar Mabson, and they love Omar Mabson, by the way. I mean, they really like him and what is going to become of his career. But the biggest concern is pass pro
mm-hmm.
with Omar Mabson. And you wonder if there's something perhaps in the works. Do they bring somebody else in, perhaps from another position? Don't know this, but from another position that is a blocking type back at this point. Not necessarily someone that's going to run the football or someone that you're passing to, but is there someone else out there that in obvious passing situations?
Are you talking about Tate Johnson? Are you talking about Tate?
Well, it could be Tate. Sure, it could be Tate at this point. I don't know that. I just wonder if that's in the works on passing situations moving forward.
Yeah, it would make sense to try to get as much help as possible when you're an obvious
right.
pass pro.
Exactly.
Talking with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. Basketball season gets underway tomorrow, and we want to talk to Andy about that. We need to get to our first break, though, this hour. Back with more with the voice of the Tigers here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. AU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio and joined by the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, and the start of Auburn men's basketball tomorrow. Andy, I mean, a lot of excitement because everybody is really wondering, hey, what's it going to look like with all these new faces, including not a new face, but a different face at the helm of the Tigers in Stephen Pearl.
Stephen takes Auburn into the exhibition game tomorrow night against Oklahoma State up at Boutwell Auditorium in Birmingham, number 20 in the AP poll. I'm not sure that – I don't think the coaches' poll will be out for a while anyway. But he is 1-0 as Auburn's head coach. Of course, he coached a game in which his father, the head coach, Bruce Pearl, was suspended for a couple games and won that game in Atlanta, as a matter of fact. So Auburn – comes into this one a brand new team, primarily, with the exception of Tahad Pettiford, who's back. Really, the same thing that could be said about Oklahoma State tomorrow night. 13 new faces on that Oklahoma State roster. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 freshmen on this team, a slew of transfers on this Oklahoma State team. So your guess is as good as anyone as to who the Cowboys will start tomorrow night at 7 o'clock in Birmingham. I'm not sure exactly who Auburn's going to start. I've got an idea. I think Tahad Pettiford is going to run the
team. Yeah, I think Tahad's a really good bet. Hold on. Think
let's tweet that out real quick. Breaking news. Yeah.
Andy Burcham says Tahad Pettiford.
Tahad's getting the start tomorrow
most
night.
Most likely to start tomorrow night.
This is not the hot take section of the show right now.
But I mean, Stephen, it's interesting. I mean, listening to Stephen tomorrow night's going to be just a really good opportunity to mix and match. I think you're going to see maybe some combinations that might surprise some people and others that I don't know that we'll see that many times again. But, I mean, they want to this is a great opportunity to just sort of find out, you know, how things go with different combinations against someone other than themselves.
Auburn will play 11 tomorrow night, and would probably play 12 if Simon Walker were healthy to play. The freshman from Huntsville who's out with a foot and probably out for the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. But I think everybody else that you would expect to play will play in tomorrow night's ball game. And I think they're looking at combinations. And this is a game to do that. I mean, the two exhibition games, I mean, there's no more what were the teams, Bill, that used to come into the Coliseum? Mobile Oil or whatever.
The EA Sports All-Stars? You talking about those
guys? Sure. Kinds of we don't do that anymore. These are, and I love the fact that you get to play these kind of games in an exhibition.
Hey, it's great. It's great that fans get to be there and we actually get to know for sure what the numbers are.
Yeah, it's not a close scrimmage. I mean, this is an opportunity to come out and watch it. I expect, and I've heard anywhere between 3,000 and 4,000 seats. I've never been to Boutwell. I know there's a great history for that auditorium, so I'm looking forward to that. Getting to broadcast in a historic venue like that one. We're going to be in the end zone, by the way, calling this game, so that'll be fun.
Oh, yeah.
Haven't done that since calling high school basketball back in the 80s in Southern Illinois. But looking forward just to watching this team and learning about this team. I mean, there's a lot that we get to learn about Auburn. And Oklahoma State tonight, of course, Memphis and Atlanta coming up before Auburn opens the season in early November against Bethune-Cookman. So these two games don't count. And, yeah, they might coach this a little bit different just to look at the type of things that, you know, the type of combinations, who plays well with others, you know. And it's going to be a different style, I think, of Auburn basketball than what we've seen for the last couple of years with the huge inside presence of Jani Broom, who's now playing for the Philadelphia 76ers, and Dylan Cardwell, who's trying to make the roster with the Sacramento Kings. So I look forward to learning with everyone else about this Auburn basketball program tomorrow night.
Yeah, it looks like a team with a lot of firepower, Andy. Auburn does.
I agree. And I wonder if it is playing where Stephen wants this team to play from a defensive standpoint at this point. I think I know the answer to that.
Yeah,
right,
I think
now.
So too.
But we look forward to it. We will have this game will be on the Auburn Tigers game day app only. It's not going to be on the radio affiliates is a digital broadcast only. You can watch the game on YouTube as well, but we ask you to tune in and listen to our call. It'll be myself and Randall Dickey and Brad Law on the call from Boutwell Auditorium tomorrow night. We'll go on the air about 6:55. Very, very brief pregame show, and then it's time to tip it off between the Tigers and the Cowboys.
Andy, what I find so interesting about this combination of players is that it's not only a team where you've assembled, it's Tahad and an entirely new group. So many of the players are going to be playing their first Division I basketball with this team, right? It's not a group that was assembled. Because often, you look at like Kentucky and Arkansas last year, like they built their teams largely out of the portal, but they did so mostly with guys that were playing D1 basketball at different places. To assemble a roster where players are coming from junior college and from high school and from D2 and from Europe, like the different, I'm really interested to see who takes to to this style and who maybe struggles to adapt to this level.
Well, Jokic comes in from Bosnia Herzegovina. This will be his first Division I basketball competition that he will see. Emeka Opurim, the 7-footer out of Butler Community College. They like Elijah Freeman, the transfer from Division II Lincoln Memorial.
Right.
And then, of course, Abdul Bashir, the sharpshooter, who originally is from Omaha, transferred from Casper College, where had 131 three-pointers at Casper College, second-team JUCO All-American. And then they like Caden Magwood. I think he is what Tahad Pettiford was to Auburn a year ago. He's your backup point guard. They like his ability. Sebastian Williams-Adams is a fantastic athlete. Explosive athlete at 6'8", the freshman from Houston. So, I mean, all of these guys getting those first bits of action against a team that was in the NIT a year ago, finished 17-18. And it's a brand new team for Oklahoma State as well. Stephen Pearl said that these two programs have exchanged about 15 minutes of their practice film where they are scrimmaging against each other with officials. So that's the game film that these two teams have on each other.
That's the only way,
because there's so many new players on both squads.
Right, that's the only way you could see as many of the new players at one time.
So I look forward to it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Look forward to getting back into the basketball swing of things, even in the middle of a football season. We'll have that broadcast tomorrow night on the Auburn Tigers app at 6:55.
Looking forward to that, and then you turn right around. And you've got Missouri coming in this Saturday evening, so you guys will be on the air Saturday afternoon. Just go ahead and give us the rundown of everything else that we need to be keeping up with there with the Auburn Sports Network.
Well, we had just a fabulous lineup last week on our pregame. It's one of the all-timers.
Oh, yes, indeed.
With Cam Newton and Terry Bowden. It was great to have him back on the stage as he was back on campus. We really had just a Travis Williams, who was back, and it was just fun. We had a really good time with all the folks that were back. We had Stephen Pearl on our pregame show as Auburn's head coach as well. Among our guests on the Tiger Tailgate show coming up this weekend, as Bill mentioned, we'll be on the air at 3:30, on the stage on the east side of Jordan-Hare Stadium. Among our guests that are confirmed right now, Auburn women's basketball coach Larry Vickers is our guest picker this week. We will talk with Dwayne Brandon in our campus spotlight with communications and marketing. Lee Zemba and Nosa Egwi will also be on the stage with us. Nosa, who played on both of Auburn's national championship the two teams that played in the national championship, he was on the 10 team that won it. He was on the 13 team that suffered that tough loss to Florida State. John Cohen is going to join me in the booth right at 5:30.
Oh, okay.
To talk a lot. And, boy, there's a lot of things to talk about with John.
Yes, indeed.
And he will join me in the booth. We continue to work on our lineup for Saturday. Right now on the Talking Tigers podcast, my sit-down just about a week after he was named the head coach with Stephen Pearl. That's right now. If you want to learn more about Stephen and this team and the things that he is going through and the staff are going through as they get ready for tomorrow night's exhibition opener. Next week, our conversation with Rachel Corbelli, the Auburn associate volleyball coach whose entire family has been or is currently a college volleyball coach. And in 2 weeks, as we get to celebrate the hiring of Butch Thompson to sit down with the Auburn baseball coach. Right in the middle, of course, of their fall ball at this point. Hard to believe it's been a decade since he was fired after fall practice. Didn't even get a fall practice with his first team at Auburn. And what he has done and what Auburn has done to fortify that program with the additions to Plainsman Park. I'm just so excited about what's happening with Auburn baseball. But that's in the next couple of weeks on the Talking Tigers podcast.
Looking forward to all of it, Andy. Once again, we really appreciate you spending some time with us here this afternoon. And looking forward to hearing you tomorrow night and then seeing you on Saturday.
I will see you all there, guys. Have a great day. Our broadcast begins 3:30 over on Wings 94.3 on Saturday. So looking forward to another great day at Jordan-Hare Stadium. Guys, you have a great one today. War Eagle!
Voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us. Yeah, fun week for him getting to, you know, do basketball and then Missouri football on Saturday night.
Yeah, no, when November rolls around and you got some football games around that basketball schedule, yep. It's going to be a busy time for Andy. Always happy he can make a little bit of time for us. If you missed any of Andy Burcham, check out the podcast The Drive, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. And the podcast available wherever you get your favorite podcasts, ESPNAU.com, or just go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron.
As we get to our bottom of the hour break, Andy mentioning John Cohen's going to be on with him in the pregame on Saturday. He will be on with us tomorrow. Did get a time change, so 5:15 tomorrow, John Cohen joining Dan and me here on The Drive.
Right in the middle
looking forward to that.
Right in the middle of happy hour. Enjoy.
Why not?
Talk with John Cohen
a little bit. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Open up the phone lines, 334-321-1390, sponsored by Skybar. Come on in and join us here on The Tuesday Drive. Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. 334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline. And let's get to it, and Rob gets us started. Hey, Rob.
Hey, guys. I don't know how much I missed yesterday's show. I don't even know where we were. I was so busy. But I think this is what we've got to come to grips with. We all know what happened with the officials, but it's not going to change the outcome. And when the coach, just like a dad who's got – 5 kids in the house and a wife comes home, you got to make sure everything's okay in spite of what happened. I think when Hugh Freeze looks like the defeated man, which I've called him since he got to Auburn, it trickles down to the players. And they start taking on this victim mentality, and it's got to stop because they openly admitted it affected the second half. As Coach Dye would say, you've got 60 minutes to win the football game. Don't let the refs determine the outcome. I mean, it is horrible. Last night, Rich Clark, executive director of the college football playoff, spoke to the Touchdown Club. And I asked him a question, and I said, first off, let me say, Coach, it's good to see the blind are now employed by the SEC officials, but I digress. I want to ask you about the big picture of college football. But everybody in the room, they all know it. Every school's been through this. I just wish Hugh Freeze would just and Cohen and Freeze putting that letter out on Thursday before the A&M game. Congratulations. Oklahoma beat Auburn twice. And we know the offense isn't very productive. It's pathetic. Why not give Deuce Knight a shot? Do something. But I cannot remember. You know, as a fan, I'm not a player or a coach, so it doesn't matter really what I'm saying. I never can remember leaving a game feeling as sick at my stomach. But if I'm a player on that team, the captains, whoever's left, I'm demanding every player on the team, like, get over it. I mean, we just got to figure out something. Your Auburn fan base is there for everything. We support. We pump money. We pack the stadium. And you're charging us Ruth Chris Steakhouse filet prices and giving us a CK's Coffee Shop steak. It's got to change. And, you know, the Auburn people have just got to demand it. And we've got the people that have been selecting these coaches. You know what? The same people that allowed Stephen Leith to become president, that's a $100 million mistake. Auburn people, we got to do better. And we got to do better, like, immediately. And you know what? Whatever we do, if it's a new offensive coordinator, a new coach, we got to do it. We got to do something.
You know, I'm going to jump in here, Rob, because I want to ask, because yeah. I've heard some folks say this. Let's go back to when Auburn was searching for a coach after the 22 season. Like, I understood the arguments against giving Freeze a shot, but I also understood the arguments for it, right? The thought that this guy recruited the way he did at Ole Miss, right, and given Auburn's resources, it could be a different story as far as what kind of player he can get and what it could mean.
He understands the SEC, and he had a very good track record offensively.
Like, to me, giving Freeze the shot initially isn't necessarily the mistake, even if this thing falls apart. It's going to be, once you know he's not the guy, how long do you stick with it? Right? Like, to me, and some folks have maybe already decided. Like, you've seen enough. You have enough data now that he's not the guy. Maybe you need to see how the rest of this season plays out before you make that sort of determination. And you're right. Whatever's decided, like, just like when people lament the firing of Gus, I don't necessarily think moving on from Gus Malzahn after the 2020 season was by itself a huge mistake. But if you mess up the next guy, if you don't hire the right guy, then it can become a gigantic mistake to move on. And I think that's where this is going to be, you know, the decision, whatever it is going to be a really important one.
So Dan, that's great, because you and Bill are two true grit journalists, and I respect the daylights out of what you say. I'm just saying, I think if Hugh Freeze has a problem, I think he listens to Gus too much or somebody. And look, if you're the head coach at Auburn, poke your chest out. Shave, take your pride in your appearance and quit looking like the defeated man, because your fan base is not defeated. I mean, Auburn fans are accustomed to the 13th winningest program in the history of college football, finally recognizing all these national championships. You know, Alabama caught some grief about it in 83 or 84, whenever they did it. They had a hell of a summer. They won 5 titles. But eventually, it just becomes accepted as fact. And so when you see a helmet on there one day with Auburn that says 9 or 10 or 11, that's what it'll be, and no one will know any different. Auburn people, quit worrying about what Alabama says and start beating Alabama and Georgia. I mean,
Rob, hold on, Rob, because I don't want Rob, I don't want that last point to get lost there, because I know you're a firm believer in, like, how you do anything is how you do everything, and so, you know, it's like, I mean, if you're not there, you know, if it's unkempt looking at the press conference, it could be unkempt looking on the field.
You know, it's funny, though. I mean, he's not the first person has asked me, said, gee, he looks cleaner shaven at press conferences than he does during ball games.
I'll tell you, Rob, I think if I had to boil it down to one mistake, and this gets kind of psychological, too, I think it feels like for the second year in a row, Hugh Freeze has made a mistake in choosing his quarterback, in part out of a desire to fix a quarterback, which Mike Leach has said before is a really hard thing to do. Fixing a quarterback that has shown you that he, as opposed to taking, especially in this day and age of college football, with all the guys out there in the portal who are coming off strong seasons, right, on the field, guys who played well last year, Hugh Freeze went out and got a guy who was last in the conference in yards per attempt, but an enormous recruit. Right, because Hugh Freeze believed Hugh Freeze didn't move on from Peyton.
Right.
He didn't move on from Peyton Thorne after year one. He thought, I can fix Peyton Thorne in that second year and bring out the best in him.
I don't think he's ever struggled with quarterbacks the way he has since he's been at Auburn.
And I think that I think
it is really, you can see it weighing very heavily on him.
And trying to fix a quarterback is the thing that you know leads sailors to the rocks. It's a siren song, Rob.
Well, Mother Teresa said it best. we can't do everything, but we can all do something. Coach Freeze, you can't fix every quarterback. Find you one that's on an uptrend. And to quote the late, great Mark Green, one of Bill and I's best friends ever, if a dog will bite, he'll do it when he's a pup. And you know what? I'm sorry. I thought Jackson Arnold would work out.
Yep.
I thought Auburn could win 10 games this year. You got a roster that could do it. But you know what? Give Deuce Knight a shot. Do something. But as Shook said, the seventh D, damn it, do something. You've got to try. And you, because the way you finish every game carries over to practice. It carries over to the week going into the next game.
That's going to carry over right into the next game. And you talked about the fan base. And the fan base, they'll be there. But, you know, they're much quicker. They'll be much quicker to turn if they see the same things being tried and no different results.
And I think what I saw, Rob, what I saw against Georgia, because I wasn't at the Oklahoma game and I wasn't at the Texas A&M game. And what I saw from Georgia made me wonder about the Auburn. Oh, maybe the Auburn offensive line isn't as bad as we thought it was, and it's a timing problem at quarterback. Some of those sacks in those two road games. Maybe the receivers are more open than we realize, and it's a question of the guy. Again, not to put everything on Jackson, but you know what? It's a lot of it's quarterback with this offense. A lot of it's what are you getting out of the quarterback
Hugh Freeze's
position?
Freeze's offenses have been very quarterback centric, and now the one thing though, Rob, it looks like right now that if there were to be a change, I would think you're going to see Ashton Daniels.
Yeah.
As your next guy up.
But I can't help but think the ice is cracking a little bit under Jackson Arnold. And if he doesn't get going against Missouri, I wonder if he's the quarterback that whole game.
Well, I was sitting up with a bunch of donors their family, they get asked to come on the field at games, and they were so disgusted and put out, but it was a lot more about the officials. These people are like we are, dyed-in-the-wool Auburn fans. You cannot ask for a better, more loyal, passionate fan base in America. Auburn people don't love Auburn because of the teams. They love Auburn because of Auburn. The teams are the beneficiaries of that love and that passion. I saw my friend from Tigers Unlimited, Chris Gary. You can't get better than that guy. You can't get better than those people. I saw Travis Williams back then. I mean, he let go in Arkansas. Where did he go? He comes right back to Auburn. People love, every former coach wants to come back. There's something special about this place, and God bless America. Auburn people, I mean, it's tough. I mean, I always say, if you expect the team to play the full 60, you got to stay the full 60. I stay till the end like I always do, never leave until it's over, because I never had my parents do that to me as a kid in my games, and I never done it to my kids, and I won't do it to my grandchildren. We got to back them. But we got to fix things, and we need to do it now.
Yeah, no question about that, Rob. Great call. We are way behind. Got to get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join us, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive. With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. 7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final couple of minutes of hour number one. Right back to the phones we go, and Hank is up next. Hey, Hank.
Hey, guys, real quick, I just wanted to say that I've been wanting to call in for a couple of weeks, but I was so sad to hear about the passing of Rudy Johnson. I started watching football, Auburn football, in 93, and he was my favorite player of all time. I mean, just his yards after carry, the way he seemed to get stronger as he went on. I mean, him and that year, that 2000 year, pulling us out of the, late Bowden year funk.
Oh, yeah, from nothing. I mean, from struggling 5-6 to the SEC championship game.
Yeah, and I mean, he was just, like I said, I mean, I know there have been better Auburn running backs statistics-wise, but for my money, the way I would spend my Saturday afternoon watching him, I just hope his family knows, how much at least he meant to this Auburn fan. So, and I can't wait to see who the next Rich Johnson is to pull us out of this five-year terrible place that we've been in. So,
I hear you.
Anyway, I'll let y'all get on to it.
Appreciate it, Hank. 334-321-1390. We're about out of time here in hour number one. So we
Should have our usual visit from Jake Crane at the at the bottom of hour number two as well. And as you mentioned, do want people to know, John Cohen, tomorrow
at 5:15. So Jason Caldwell will be with us in hour number one. John Cohen will join us in the second hour. Right now, we've got to step aside for our top of the hour break. Right back with hour number two and more of your phone calls until Jake Crane joins us at 5:30. So come on in here on the Tuesday Drive.
This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to the second hour of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Taking your calls, questions, comments, 334-321-1390. And let's...
A lot to talk about. You know, I mean, with John Cohen appearing on the show tomorrow and people still reacting to Auburn, Georgia, getting ready for Auburn, Missouri, Auburn basketball, men's basketball underway tomorrow night with the exhibition in Birmingham. SEC Media Day is going on right now with men's basketball as well. Auburn's going to do their turn through
the
car wash tomorrow.
Yeah. And then go play Oklahoma State at Boutwell tomorrow night there in Birmingham.
And some high stakes playoff baseball.
The AL and NLCS underway as the Dodgers with another great performance from Blake Snell.
Must win tonight for the Brewers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Game two at home. Next three are in L.A.
I mean, sort of like Seattle and Toronto. It's like, well, Toronto loses two at home, and they are really, really up against it now. The Brewers already have given home field advantage to the Dodgers.
Feels like the Brewers also probably need to win the Peralta starts.
In
this series, and they're getting one tonight against Yamamoto for the Dodgers. Should be a really good one.
Yeah, so a lot going on we can talk about, and we'll go ahead and get right to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, and Bill gets us started this hour. Hey, Bill.
Hey, good afternoon, guys, and enjoying the show. We have six games left in the season,
right?
And, you know, it's been rumored that Ashton Daniels wants to redshirt this year. It's pretty obvious from what I saw earlier in the year that a freshman is not ready to go in and be a starter. So is Hugh not just forced to ride it out?
No, you know, it's interesting because I'm not sure if it was Ashton's idea to redshirt or Auburn. Yeah. I got the feeling, Bill, that this was something Auburn sort of offered Ashton as a possibility. Like, come in and compete, and, you know, if things are going well, we may be able to save you a year of eligibility. But I don't think Ashton came in expecting or saying he wanted a redshirt.
This was actually, so there was a question on Tiger Talk last night that was along these lines, where
right.
Hugh Freeze was asked by one of the fans in attendance, like, it was a two-parter, how close did you come to making a quarterback change, and how ready is Ashton Daniels, or is the plan still to redshirt him? Hugh focused more on the second part,
right.
And not so much on the how close was he to ever actually putting Jackson on the bench, but he did talk about I think that the Ashton Daniels stuff was earlier in the season thinking. Mm-hmm. And if Ashton Daniels
Jackson's the guy and we'll ride him, not expecting to see some of the bumps that we've seen in the road.
Yeah, I'd say that was thinking before Jackson's three-game rough stretch or mm-hmm. two-and-a-half-game rough stretch or however you want to view this. And I think what Hugh Freeze did say was, like, if it's about winning games.
Yes, that's what it's about.
They're not going to be adhering to, well, Ashton might have an extra year of eligibility if you don't play him very much. I think if they think Ashton could win them games instead of Jackson, they'll make that switch.
Yeah, well, I've been convinced that Ashton could win his games for about the last three games. Mm-hmm. So I'm convinced. But I know, is there a fourth quarterback on the team?
Not scholarship.
Yeah,
remember the kid at Texas from Auburn who was at Troy was thought to be coming to Auburn, but they only have three scholarship quarterbacks.
Yeah,
they got a couple of walk-ons.
They have walk-ons running the scout team, but when the quarterbacks take drills, it's the three guys doing the vast majority of the individual work.
Right. Well, I'd love to. I can't wait for Deuce, but on the other hand, I don't want to ruin him. So I guess we're going to have to ride it out with Jackson. And I don't know if that will be detrimental to Hugh's career, but it certainly seems so from my vantage point.
It has.
Appreciate the show, guys.
Yeah, it surely hasn't helped that things have gone the way they have to this point. 334-321-1390. And Philly Fanatic is up next. What's up?
Hey, I'd like to change the narrative just a minute from the Auburn University Lonely Hearts Club football team to, and I can, we can circle back to that in a minute,
all right,
to the most incredible double play, I think, in history.
Oh, man.
It is the first ever in postseason.
Yes. And the last
like
one, and the last one in the regular season, and shout out to the Elias for getting this one, it was
well, the last one was actually caught.
Sosa and Griffey.
10-8, 6-2 or whatever it was caught.
It involved Sosa hitting it out to Griffey in like 04. But no, that play last night was bananas.
So, Dan, you explain to everybody what happened, because the Brewers center fielder, he still doesn't know what happened.
No, he thought he caught it. He still thought he caught it. He looked down, the ball's being bobbled, and it was in his glove.
So because the ball goes off the glove and then off the wall and then catches it.
So here's what happened. Look, you've got bases loaded. Max Muncy hits a drive that Sal Frelick goes up like he's going to try to rob him of a homer. But as you said, the ball goes off his glove and then off the wall, but doesn't bounce back. It just sort of trickles down the wall, and he then sees it, and the ball lands back in his glove. He thought at that point that he caught it and is just getting the ball back in the infield. But because the ball hit the wall, it is in play.
Yes.
And so that means a force play is in play.
404-footer would have been gone in 9 major league stadiums, including Dodger Stadium, where would have been a grand slam. Instead, it's a GIDP for Max Muncy officially in the scorebook, because there were force outs at 2 different plays.
But and Wilson Contreras, I mean, was sharp enough to realize that when the umpire called out that it was a force and just didn't even sprint, he just sort of jogged down to third base and beat Will Smith to third to get the third out and get the double play.
Yeah. Right.
Well, it reminded me of the old Abbott and Costello line. Who's on first? What's on second?
Right.
And I don't know who's on third, because he seemed to be the only one that knew what was going on.
Yeah, he did.
Well, amid the chaos, the Dodgers base runners clearly did not know that the ball wasn't caught. Like they all played it like they had to tag, and it became kind of like the situation that creates the infield fly rule, except the infield fly in this case happened to, like, the double play that people are worried about. That could happen without the where a guy
you
can,
could have got they would have gotten it they could have gotten a triple play on that play going, and Contreras had run on to second, he might have gotten gotten another out. The only guy who was going to be safe on that was Muncy, who ran hard.
Muncy ran to first, not knowing that, because he'd put a ball in play, but the Dodgers base runners not realizing that the ball wasn't caught and thinking they had to tag up, and not tagging up with the bases loaded, it creates. Yeah, the craziest double play you'll see, most likely the craziest double play you'll see in the playoffs.
That's why you watch games, though, because you never know when you're going to see something that you've never seen.
So how about
before this,
Bill? Where should the base runners be looking in that situation if they're not sure that the center fielder...
I would say, in
a force-out situation, you're not sure if the center fielder actually came down with it.
Well, you better find a coach or an umpire that's going to let you know if the ball's in play.
And I think communication was probably going to be pretty difficult. That's because that place was going bananas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's say Dodgers. I mean, they are a very good team because they came back from a ball that was 2 feet away from hitting a grand slam and still won the game.
Yep.
Where Auburn University has a fumble and the first half,
and it breaks,
and they lose the game because they're not a good team.
Well, it's because, I mean, they do not have the mindset or the whatever to be able to put something behind them. And that's something we were talking about a while ago with the caller. I mean, that is something that you have to be able to do to compete, is to put bad things behind you. Hey, bad things are going to happen. Things aren't always going to go your way, But if you let that continue to bother you, it's just going to, you know, you've heard don't let a team beat you twice. Well, don't let a play continue to beat you after it's already over.
And that's true. And that's true in any sort of performance-related industry,
absolutely,
right? Because you're
is.
Not going to be able to, if you're a musician or a dancer, right? Like a mistake.
You better just, you need to keep going.
You can't
and,
be waiting. Yeah.
Yeah.
You flub a line as an actor early in the play, you can't be worried about it 30, 45 minutes later. No. You just got to keep, you got to say the next line.
Yeah. One more thing about Jackson Arnold and Gunnar Stockton. Jackson is really good at drop pass, and it works really well when they're blocking, but he does not have the lateral movement and ability to throw the run. Gunnar Stockton showed us. He put on a show in that second half by running away from the Auburn defenders who sacked mm-hmm. him at the beginning of the game and threw 10-yard passes on the dot through the from 20-yard line to the end zone. He couldn't be stopped. Mm-hmm. Whereas Jackson Arnold, he's big and strong, but he doesn't have that lateral movement.
What were those numbers on 10-plus-yard passes, Dan?
Jackson is 1-for-11 in his last three games, I believe, when the ball goes more than 10 yards downfield.
You can't move the chains. You can't win the game.
You're right about that. Good hearing from you.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. We'll get right back to the phones. I think, was it Jeremy up next? Hey, Jeremy.
Yeah, hey, guys. The other thing about that play last night, you're asking, like, what should the runners do? If they know the rules well enough, they know that as soon as the center fielder touched the ball, they were free to go. Their problem was when they saw him bobbling it, they went back to the base then. Mm-hmm. Like, they left the base and then went back to tag when they didn't have to.
Right.
The rule is when the fielder touches the ball, at that point, you're free to go.
The runners who had been tagging could.
All right, I usually know baseball pretty well. So Jeremy, if this is just a fly ball in the outfielder, and the outfielder, the ball hits his glove, but then pops up in the air, they can go from time it touches the glove.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's something that I didn't realize.
It's one of those rules that, like, umpires like myself, I umpired high school.
Fortunately, I knew I wasn't going to be able to umpire. I usually just knew enough of the rules to be able to argue them. But that's great info.
That was the mistake, was the runners, if you watch it, they all take off it hits his glove initially.
Mm-hmm.
And they leave the base, and then they go back. And they don't have to. If they all just go, the Dodgers miss. You know, the Dodgers get their run.
Yeah, the Dodgers get a run. The bases are still loaded, and there's still just one out.
And there's only one out.
Right.
That was the glitch. Was the runners, and it's instinct. Like I've seen it. Like I've done high school ball, junior college ball. I called a couple of Auburn's false scrimmages. Like I have seen enough to know your instinct is just, oh, he didn't catch it, I've got to go back.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess that was never, you know, when I was playing, that was never really told. We were always just told, you've got to tag, you know, you've got to tag after the ball is caught. I mean, is the way we were told. Not after the ball touches the glove. That would be a much better way to teach base runners.
Yeah, they don't punish the base runner for the fielder bobbling the ball, basically.
Okay.
That's the way to look at it. And talking about people that don't know what's going on, Hugh Freeze, guys, I had this conversation with y'all last year. Who's the quarterback that he ever recruited that ended up being anything?
Yeah. No, I mean it's. I mean you can look at guys who had productive college football careers, right?
No, but he's right. I mean he's right. I mean Bo Wallace, Chad,
Malik.
Kelly. I mean Malik. They're guys that started somewhere else.
They're all guys that started somewhere else. Right now you're in year three. Who's the quarterback on our roster that he's been attempting to develop?
Mm. I mean there were projects the first 2 years that left after a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I am convinced that Hugh Freeze is a myth that some people bought into about his quarterback coaching abilities. And, like, I just think done it.
He's never done it as far as coaching a guy without a track record.
Yes, developing
and then turning him in. But even even still, Jeremy, in today's game, I mean, yes, that's important, but there are quarterbacks already playing well that hit the portal every offseason too. And I think in the case of, you know, we made that point a little bit earlier in the show where it feels like with Hugh Freeze, two times in a row now he's tried to pick a guy coming off a bad season and try to fix him, which feels exceptionally difficult in college football. Peyton Thorne from his first year to his second year at Auburn, and Jackson Arnold coming off last year at Oklahoma, now at Auburn.
And now you're going to get into the seven deadly sins of Hugh Freeze, and the biggest one is pride. Like, that guy thinks he can do it, and he thinks anybody that questions him doesn't know what they're talking about. And, like, that's just the end of it. Like, he's going to run his stuff no matter what. It doesn't matter, you know. A football coach should not have a hard time saying, this is how the game's going, this is what's working, let's do this. Whether it's what I want to do or not, that's not a football coach. Mm. And now my third target of the day is John Cohen. If he hasn't had a conversation with Hugh Freeze along the lines of the conversation he was having with the referees on the way off the field on Saturday, he's not doing his job.
Well, we will talk with John tomorrow, and I do know that he was asked, I guess it was AL.com, him, and he said,
yeah.
I mean, he just gave that, sort of a nebulous answer of, there's no change in the plans right
and
now.
And maybe I'm missing the point, Jeremy, because we had a caller yesterday ask about sort of like, well, where is the line where you decide, all right, well, a mid-season change needs to happen with Hugh Freeze. And I think for everybody that answer can be different, but I think right now you can at least take, and it's not much, but you can take some solace in the idea that these games have been competitive so far, even if they're losses, because usually when you're talking about a team making a change at mid-season, you look at UCLA, you look at Arkansas this year.
Look at Penn State.
Those weren't, well, with Penn State, those were coming off. Those were close losses to bad
but
teams.
It's shocking losses, yeah, though.
But like UCLA and Arkansas, they made changes after their team got their doors blown off.
Oh, yes.
In situations where they wouldn't. I wonder if you're one game away from that situation. Like, I do wonder, maybe we'll talk to John Cohen about this a little bit. Like, how close you might be to something, to a critical situation.
Well, I'm glad you all agree that this should have happened after the New Mexico State game. Because that was a blowout loss
a shocking blowout loss. Yes, it was.
Right. Like the idea that hasn't already happened. I understand that the finances behind it, John Cohen has more than just X's and O's, wins and losses to worry about. Like, he's got to dig in the couch cushions to find the money to do it. Maybe we should move the Mizzou game to Atlanta and raise the funds to fire the coach. But, has he taken as much time to be as disappointed to Hugh Freeze as he was the officials on Saturday?
That's good question. I wouldn't expect that to be public. I mean, yeah.
Because, again, if not, like, has he not just told you, like, at this point, this is what it's going to take?
I
don't know.
He may have Jeremy, but I highly doubt that he would let us know.
No, I think that, but I would imagine, I mean, John Cohen's been in the SEC long enough, and he's seen when things are working, and he's seen when things aren't working. I would certainly imagine that he's aware of how perilous the situation may or may not be. And yeah, we had a caller yesterday talking about well if this happens against Missouri and then Arkansas and then Vanderbilt, it's like I don't think there's a plan beyond Missouri right now. I think let's see how this looks on Saturday night. And then we'll see. We can have conversations about where you go from there.
Yeah, we're all day to day.
That's exactly right. Some of us more than others.
Yeah, no question. Need to get to our first break of hour number two. Again, more of your phone calls until we get to the bottom of the hour when Jake Crane joins us. So come on in here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. We appreciate had a call there during the break. Someone else was we were talking about that crazy double play last night in the Dodgers Brewers game.
We haven't yet. Yeah, it's remarkable stuff. We haven't talked at all about like some of the other stuff going on in college football this past weekend.
Penn State's looking for a coach.
Yeah, an Auburn Georgia game like that will Matt Rhule
is the guy?
I mean,
I would.
The fact that he
seems to be the most obvious.
Well, just the thought that he is a former Penn State player and the AD who hired him at Temple is now the AD
at Penn State, and his buyout is not much at all.
And the AD that hired him at Nebraska is now at Texas A&M, Trev Albert. So he's not working for the guy who originally hired him in the first place. And maybe some folks at Nebraska would be willing to let Matt Rhule move on to go find their own guy. To take over there, but yeah, it does feel like Matt Rhule,
only $5 million.
Yeah, and for a guy who maybe that's been the dream job for him.
Yeah, no
potentially.
Kidding. He was a walk on at Penn State.
Wonder where James Franklin ends up too. I mean, that's a guy who will wind up somewhere. Won a lot of football games at Vanderbilt and at Penn State, even if some of the biggest games didn't go his way.
You know, you think maybe if Kentucky makes a move, I don't know. I mean, James Franklin will be, he'll be a head coach pretty quickly. I mean, if he wants to be, again, a $49 million buyout, so he doesn't have to do anything immediately. But I feel like James Franklin will be coaching, if not next year, pretty soon thereafter.
Let's get back to the phones. Roy is hanging on.
Hey, Roy.
Hey guys, what's up?
Man, pretty well. You know what's up.
We're hanging in there.
What are you thinking?
I got an interesting question.
All right.
If Ty Simpson was our quarterback, what would Auburn's record be?
Ooh. You know, that's a really good question because I don't know how much play calling and game plan figure into this. I would think it would be better than 3-3.
I would think so too. I think his accuracy would be a huge difference.
He really is.
I have a longtime friend who is convinced that Auburn's undefeated with Pavia this year. So Ty Simpson's an interesting.
You know, there are a couple of guys that have come into Auburn from smaller
Mendoza,
schools and have beaten them. Yeah, absolutely.
Mendoza from Cal that Auburn saw last year.
Who's now at Indiana.
And looks like the best quarterback in college football a year later.
And that leads you to the question, you know, when do you make the change, man? I mean, if Simpson could make us undefeated, I mean, I wonder what Deuce or the other guy could do. I mean, just – I don't know, man.
It's tougher. It feels like a mid-game change is tougher than a Monday morning change and a decision that you're going to go with the new guy a week later. When he benched Peyton Thorne last year, you know, he watched Cal and he said, I want to see the film. You know, that was the thinking Saturday night, and then on Monday morning, they made the announcement they were going to go with Hank instead of Peyton. You know, I didn't know if we were going to see a change mid-game. I kind of wondered if after
I think it's more likely now
after that game but hearing Hugh talk,
yeah. Well, all he said was Jackson's going to start.
Yeah,
and remember he talked about how Jackson played well in the first half and didn't. So I would guess you'd wait a series into the third quarter. And if it doesn't look good, then you might see something else.
Yeah, for the first time this year, I feel like Auburn's going into the game where there's pressure on the starting quarterback to get something done in the first couple drives, or they might have to try something else.
Yep.
I just worry how we're going to do against Alabama going against Ty Simpson with our guy. You know,
you're not kidding.
I worry, so far we haven't been able to answer a score.
I don't think anybody wants to go up against Ty Simpson right now the way he's playing.
We can't answer one score. How about multiple scores?
Right.
You know, which it comes down to. All right, guys, y'all take care.
Good hearing from you, Roy. Take care, man. I hadn't heard from Roy in a long time. We can get one more before we get to our bottom of the hour break.
I don't think I answered the phone on this one. I think they called while we were talking to Roy. So let's go to the phones. Callers, who's this?
This is Slack.
Hey, Slack.
Hey, Slack. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Hey, guys. Some years ago when the NIL first came to light, I had an interesting conversation with a gentleman that was a coach here, a player here. And he brought up a point. He said it's going to, you know, certain schools it's going to kill because we're going to be so – they're going to have so much pressure to have to play the guy that's making the most money. That's what's going on. And it's going to keep continuing to go on, you know, just like NFL. You know, guys that's making the money, you got to play them.
Well, I wonder, though, I mean, you've also got to win – to keep your job, and I mean, just because the guy you're paying the most. I mean, go ahead, Slack.
When does it get to that point where you figure out, okay, my job's on the line, so I might need to make a change? So,
I would think it'd be pretty close to a situation like we have right now.
And Slack, I'm not I'm very rarely a bench the quarterback, make a change, you know, I've seen enough of this guy, go to the bench type. Like, that's not really my style. I don't remember the last time I was watching an Auburn starting quarterback and thinking, I think I'm ready to see what else you've got on the depth chart.
Hold on. And you've been in Auburn how many years?
I know. I'm trying to think the last time I personally thought, okay, we need to sit this guy and go with the next guy. Like, I mean, I didn't really think that with Bo, I never really wanted to see any of the other options. I didn't think they were better. With Stidham, like towards the end, maybe you could have made the case for Malik, but it's been a while, right? Since I've felt this way.
Yeah.
And with Jackson, I was ready to give him the Georgia game because the bye week and because he hadn't played one at home yet.
Yep.
And it's I thought that you wanted a sample size. You wanted enough data before you made this decision. I'm leaning towards having seen enough.
Yeah, I've seen enough too. And I'm not putting the blame on him. But when we got guys wide open, you're throwing the ball at their feet. You're throwing the ball behind them. You're throwing the ball over the head.
Yeah, when they're out there by themselves, behind everybody.
I mean, has he done anything better than Jeremy Johnson's done at Auburn when he was at Auburn?
He didn't turn it over, but he didn't create any big plays at all through the air.
It's tough to think of a quarterback where it's like, you know, his accuracy was a problem, but it got better. Like, it's tough to find an example. I could name you quarterbacks who had accuracy problems and then found success playing different positions. I could name you a few of those. But as far as like, yeah, accuracy is a problem, and then it wasn't for that guy. That's usually not the way the story turns out. When that's one of your problems.
One more thing, and then I'll let you go. Has the SEC said anything about the Georgia game yet?
No, not publicly. They may have, and that's something else we can ask John Cohen. Has he heard anything back from the SEC? Appreciate the call, Slack. Yeah, but there has been nothing publicly issued by the SEC about the officiating this past Saturday. Need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Our regular visit with Jake Crane is coming up, so stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. We're going to have to put your calls on hold here for a little while because we're going to head to the drive hotline. Welcome in our regular Tuesday afternoon guest here in this time slot. And that, of course, is Jake Crane from Crane & Company. Jake, how you doing today?
Oh, man, doing fantastic. I appreciate you guys having me.
Yep. Well, as you might guess, it's been a little busy here on this end after the open date and what we saw on Saturday night, which, for nearly a half, was about as good football as Auburn has played in years. And then after the call there on the goal line, which resulted in Georgia taking over, was not just more of the same. It was a little worse than what we've seen the last few weeks, because it was at home and Auburn completely couldn't do anything offensively from that point on.
Yeah, well, it almost makes it worse that they showed it to you what you thought it was going to look like, and then ripped it away. Look, I mean, I've said my piece on you know, if you go watch our reaction show right after the game, mm-hmm. That's still up on our YouTube channel. I mean, guys, it's just I'm sick of saying the same stuff over and over.
Oh yeah,
again.
No, like, kidding. We're sick of seeing the same stuff over and over again.
I know. I'm just to the point now where I think the biggest takeaway, and I think, you know, we can talk about the play calling. And look, you know, the players got to execute the play calls. And I didn't think the play calling was awful in the second half. But, you know, as the head coach, as a coaching staff, you're responsible for the players you bring in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what blows my mind is when some people are like, oh, well, the players got to play better. Well, that's like saying that, oh, well, the branch manager who hires the employees, he's a great branch manager. He just doesn't hire the right employees. Like, that is more than half the job. Bringing in players that not only are talented, but are mentally tough. And the truth is,
it's the old Jake. It's the old if you're shopping for the groceries, right? Like he's shopping for the groceries and cooking the meal. You can't blame bad groceries.
Yeah, no, it's just I think the overarching fact is this: Auburn is a mentally weak football team, and they're especially mentally weak on offense. And there's a couple ways that happens. And as a coach, you know, you're responsible for the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And look, the officiating was terrible. We can all agree on that.
Sure.
But you have a 10-3 lead at home going into half. You come out of the halftime. You stop them at midfield on fourth down, and you have a great opportunity to go make up for it. You know, what should have happened is you should have been so pissed off at halftime, now we're going to go beat them by 1,000. That's what should have happened. Mm-hmm. But that's not what this Auburn team does. And most of it is the offense, because you're mentally weak at quarterback. How about you hold on to the ball when it matters the most? Mm-hmm. How about you grow a pair and hit a wide-open receiver down the field and stop making TikToks with your girlfriend about going to eat at Guthrie's or whatever? I'm about sick of bringing in these pretty boy, mentally weak quarterbacks. Meanwhile, Gunnar Stockton's over there. He's losing half his hair. He's short. He's not the fastest. He's not the strongest. But he's got guts, and he's got a pair. So whatever this coaching staff is doing from a culture standpoint, Auburn is soft. You know, there used to be a time where Auburn won games because they were mentally tougher than the other teams. You go back to the Tuberville years, Auburn won games based off mental toughness a lot of the time. So we can sit here, and a lot of it is on the offense, but look at the defense. Right when that turnover happens, you have Georgia backed up at your place. They do a quarterback sneak on the first play that gets nothing. Then they drive all the way down the field and get a field goal mm-hmm. to give them some momentum going into half. The way they go about, I don't know what goes on in the team meetings. You know, we only see excerpts of it. I'm not at practice. But whatever this staff is doing, the players are mentally soft. You want to know how soft they are? You just had a captain try and walk out on the team basically by redshirting. Yeah, that's how soft they are. So we can sit here and talk about play calls. We can talk about scheme and this, that, or the other. Until you have a football team that is mentally tough, that not only can endure adversity but thrives through it, you ain't winning a daggum thing at this level of college football. And I don't have all the answers. There's a lot of guys that are smarter than me when it comes to this. But I do know that, and if anything's going to get Hugh Freeze fired, it's because his players and his program is mentally soft and weak. And I'll tell you another thing. I don't need the AD at halftime to go get the refs after that. Y'all would have to put me in jail for the things I would say to him going on at halftime.
Oh, yeah, as coach, yes.
I don't need the athletic director to go say it. All do it. And you want to know why the refs do what they do to Auburn and nobody else? Because they can get away with it. That's why. And until that changes, it's not going to stop, and it bleeds down to the players. And the ones I feel the worst for are the younger generation of Auburn fans that didn't get to grow up watching Auburn win the way I did, and all they've been given is this pile of you-know-what for what seems like it's been a decade now, and they can't go around and remember the times that I can remember. And I'm sick of watching it. I'm sick of saying it's okay. And, guys, I backed Hugh Freeze. I backed him, and I was wrong up until this point. And I don't know if you can flip that switch right now. I think it's the hardest thing in the world to do is to somehow make the team tougher. They're soft. They're mentally weak. They can go on Instagram, and all the social media team can put all this stuff out. But we know when it comes down to it, especially at the quarterback position, these guys don't have the guts. And a lot of people won't say it, and I get it because of access, but I don't depend on access for Auburn for nothing. I'll say it. They're soft.
Well, shouldn't it and doesn't it start at the top, though? I mean, should you rely 100%. On recruiting players that are going to make your team tough and be able to handle that?
At Indiana.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked about it. Look, your players are going to take the personality of your coach. When your coach is there on the sideline looking very distraught and down, it's hard to believe that your team's going to have confidence that they're going to be able to make plays.
Again, there's a great quote in Remember the Titans. Attitude reflects leadership. Attitude reflects leadership. And listen, Hugh Freeze, I know there's stuff in the past. He's a fantastic human being. He really is a really good guy. If you've ever got a chance to talk to Hugh Freeze, he's a great family man. He tries to do the right thing. But this is a business. There's a job for that. It's called a counselor. That's what they do. At the end of the day, this is about winning games. And you win games with tough people. That's what you win them with. And tough people are made from tough leadership. And people that see how the leadership reacts. And I'm to the point now where all the excuses are done. They're done. And you look around the country. You look at guys like Alex Golish at USF. You look at Kurt Cignetti, right, at Indiana.
How about Clark Lee?
Yeah.
Look at Mike Elko at Texas A&M. It's very simple. This is a very simple thing. You're either about it or you're not. Mm-hmm. And everybody out there knows exactly what I'm talking about. In the business they're in life, in being a parent, in being a friend, you're either about it or you're not about it. And the Auburn football program right now as we stand today, you can talk about the refs, whatever. They ain't about it.
It seems like for the second year in a row, and you can look at the first year however you want to, Jake, but a point that stands out to me as you look at Auburn's offensive issues is Jackson Arnold is a guy who was coming off a really tough season last year. Second year in a row, Hugh Freeze has tried to sort of fix a quarterback. Peyton Thorne had that tough first year at Auburn. They brought him back with the belief that you could fix it. Jackson Arnold had that tough year at Oklahoma last year. Auburn brings him in with the belief they can fix it. It feels like, especially in this climate where there are quarterbacks coming off of successful years that go into the portal in significant numbers, trying to fix a quarterback coming off of a tough year feels like it's an exceptionally difficult thing for a coach to do when trying to turn a program around.
Especially when you're you-know-what's on the line. Mm-hmm. At some point, you got to stop going to get rescues from the Humane Society. There's a reason they brought them back. Like, you got to go get a thoroughbred. If it was me on the line, you would have had to keep me from calling Fernando Mendoza every single day. Every single day. And you watched him pull your pants down in front of everybody.
Sure did.
At your place. Stop trying. It's like the women that are like, oh, well, why did you pick this guy? Oh, well, I thought I could fix him. Guess what? You're not fixing him. Especially when you're 32 years old and you need to get married and start to get this thing going.
How about this,
That's
Jake?
The part that shocks me.
How about this, Jake? Quarterbacks, programs don't fix quarterbacks. Quarterbacks fix programs. Look at Pavia. Look at what Pavia's done at New Mexico State and Vanderbilt.
Look at C.J. Carr at Notre Dame. Yep. He hadn't played a lick in college, but guess what? He's about it. He's a real one. You brought Peyton Thorne back for another year, and then you went out and got Jackson Arnold, who couldn't make it half the season at Oklahoma. How insane is that?
Like, really think about that. Mm-hmm. If you're in, if your job on the radio was on the line, and they're like, you got to start bringing on better guests, or this, that, or the other, then you go out and get a worse guest, a guy that just got fired from his own radio station? How insane is that to think? And if I'm Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton Jr., if I'm Eric Singleton Jr., I am so upset that I decided to come to Auburn when you brought this guy over here, who's basically a running back. He's a running back. He can't throw the ball 25 yards down the field and complete passes consistently. And listen, playing quarterback is hard. It's really, really hard. And everybody's not an NFL player. But Diego Pavia's not an NFL player.
Nope.
And he can do it. I don't think Gunnar Stockton's an NFL player. And he can do it. You brought in another dud when it was on the line. I don't know why you did it. I don't know who convinced you to do it. But it ain't working.
Yep. Hard to argue with any of that you've said here, Jake. Before we run out of time, I've got to get your thought. Best game this weekend in the SEC. Ooh. Is it going to be Bama, Tennessee, Georgia, Ole Miss, LSU, Vandy?
I dare you to say Auburn. I dare you to say Missouri, Auburn.
We can throw that one in, too.
No, here's the funny part. After saying all this, Jack Darnold will go out and throw for 300 yards in Missouri. We'll win by 20.
Dan has noted. Has he ever done that?
Jackson started 9 games against SEC teams in 2 years. He's gone over 200 yards twice. He's never gone over 225.
Just run the triple option, dog. Just run. I'm watching Haynes King, who's going to be a paraplegic probably in 6 years if he keeps running the ball the way he is. But it works. But it works. Look, I think the best game is probably going to end up being Vanderbilt and LSU. Mm-hmm. That's what I think the best game is going to end up being. I'm really excited to see the way that Vandy bounces back after the bye week.
Yep.
Clark Lee is another great example of flipping the script and having guys believe in the big moments. I think it's going to be Vandy. And listen, guys, look, like I said, Hugh Freeze's a great guy, man. I'm sure they're trying as hard as they can. But my washing machine tries as hard as it can. Like, that's not good enough. Like, you've got to win at places like Auburn. It is what it is, and you're not doing it. And whatever you're saying or whatever you're reading or doing, it's not working. You've got to try. Maybe it's just, look, you got to start being real honest. Like, real honest all the time. So, I hope Auburn does better. I hope it works out. I hope Hugh Freeze ends up winning 93 national championships. But I can't sit up here and pump sunshine and lose all my credibility when everybody in the world is watching this catastrophe collapse in front of our eyes yet again. So I'll take Vandy. Thank goodness I get to cover all of college football, because if I just had to cover Auburn, I'd have had a heart attack by now.
Jake, when the graphs are all going down, you're not just going to take the paper and turn it upside down and tell people that's what it looks like, right? You're going to tell people,
look, Bernie Madoff got away with it for a long time. Yeah. You ain't getting away with it when we can watch it on Saturday.
Oh, God. Great stuff. It's always so much fun with Jake. Jake, let everybody know what you got coming up.
Yeah, well, look, we put out our big preview. We previewed Auburn and Missouri today, and, you know, you can say what you want about our show. You can like it, you can not like it, but, you know, we're going to tell you what we really think. We got the big preview coming out today. We got Josh Pate coming on tomorrow to make a bunch of predictions. We got a bunch of previews out there. So if you love college football and you love honesty, just head to YouTube, go to Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N & Company, and come hang out with us.
Great stuff again. Thanks, Jake, man. Hopefully we'll make it through another week and get you back next week.
Hey, I hope next Tuesday it's nothing but sunshine and candy canes, guys. I hope so. I'll be the happiest person in Auburn.
That's one of several ways that the show could go next week.
Yeah, you're right. Trick or treat. We're getting close.
All right, see you guys.
All right. Yeah, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Love, Jake.
Yeah.
We'll be back.
Let's all take a breath and recover from that. All right, great stuff. We'll be back.
Spending your hard-earned money is a big deal to you, and it's a big deal.
Final couple of minutes here of the Tuesday Drive, and our thanks to Jake Crane joining us this hour, Andy Burcham in hour number one. Little difference, but entertaining all, always both.
And a pair of straight shooters and a pair of guys it was great to catch up with both of them. You missed any of that, podcasts of The Drive.
You definitely want to check it out if you missed any.
Available wherever you can get your favorite podcast. Go to ESPNAU.com or just go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. All that presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Tomorrow should have JC in hour number one.
Jason Caldwell should be with us in hour number one. We got, you know, Auburn basketball will be coming up tomorrow night. But I've got a feeling we'll talk a good bit more football with Jason. And then we'll have another JC in hour number two, John Cohen.
Yeah, Auburn.
Going to join us at 5:15, Auburn AD.
Auburn Athletic Director John Cohen will be joining us. And really looking forward to catching up with John about everything going on in the Auburn
Athletic Department.
Especially on the day of. Wonder if he'll be in Birmingham.
Yeah,
with Auburn and Oklahoma State in the exhibition tomorrow night.
I don't know. We were asked to move it back from 4 to 5:15, so I don't know. But we're just looking forward to that.
He can probably get a ticket, right?
I would hope so.
There's a ticket available for him.
No kidding. That's going to wrap things up for the Tuesday Drive. Another fun show. Hopefully you'll join us tomorrow. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here. Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.